Awareness observes. Wisdom understands. What that means is that through the pure observation of our mental and physical, internal and external experience, awareness just sees, oh, this is the way it is, 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 this is the way it is. But that awareness understands what is seen through the lens of deeply habituated or conditioned ideas, concepts, perceptions. Gradually, over the course of developing greater continuity and power of awareness, we begin to see more of what has always been present but had never been seen. I guess all of us have had enough experience in our beginning of practice to know that just paying attention to the breath is a very subversive activity, because it brings into view more than the breath. It trains the mind to be attentive, and then the attention sees everything. Not only the breath, but everything else that's going on. And the early part of practice is, or involves, what I call personal history review. And it's where, through our practice, the story of our life comes into view over and over and over again, and the stories that have made up or make up who we are and what we are, and painful memories and pleasant ambitions and all just the whole package comes into view, and we see things differently. We see how it really was. To give an example, in the early days of practice, we can't help but ruminate on painful experiences of our life. Pain calls our attention. The places in our minds that are still raw or tender or hurting, we keep going back to them to see what's going on there, what happened, why, what's going on. And so we review these places in our both immediate and often very distant past that are sources of tension, sources of suffering, that continue to be sources of suffering. And mindfulness is such that when it gets strong, or when awareness gets strong, or as mindfulness develops, it gets stronger. And one of the qualities of mind that accompanies awareness is what's called straightness of mind. It's one of the 52 frequencies that can be adjusted on the soundboard of the mind. And it's like truthfulness. It's like the straightness of mind. Mindfulness comes with straightness of mind. When it gets developed, you cannot deceive yourself anymore. Now, when we act in life, and when we've acted less than skillfully, we've been able to kind of put a little spin on the story of our behavior that made it okay to say that, made it okay to do that. We felt justified, and it was something, it might have been painful, but it was the right thing to do. And somehow, we always put ourselves in a pretty good light. You know, we somehow can tolerate and accept who we are because we put the spin on things. But when mindfulness gets strong and you start reviewing some of what you said and some of what you did in the past, you know, and the mind can no longer spin, It just ceased. This is the way it was. You can't deceive yourself anymore. You really see, well, that was unskillful. That was really hurtful. I was really a jerk. That was a shameful thing to do. That caused me pain, or that caused others pain. Or we see what others did to us that we put a positive light on, and we put a beneficial thing on, and we tried to see it that way, or we tried to see them in an okay way, and we can't anymore. We just see, this is the way it is. It was hurtful, it was negligent, it was shameful, it was humiliating, it was whatever, fearful, and you can't pretend otherwise. So what happens when we recover the truth of the way it was, we have to deal with the emotions of it. We have to deal with it, because now, for the first time, we are feeling fully, in this present moment, what we could not allow ourselves to feel at that time. That was suppressed, that was repressed, to use psychological terms. That was clouded by delusion. The film of delusion just kind of came over us in that experience, and we, you know, like, didn't see it. Didn't experience it. It didn't happen. You know, I wasn't that way. I wasn't so guilty. I wasn't so wrong. They were really pretty nice, but they weren't. And now we see, because the layers of delusion have been peeled off, and you feel, and the mind doesn't lie. Mindfulness doesn't lie. It sees things just as they were. So we have to grow in this capacity to open to a range of personal history and emotions and the intensity of emotion that often we're unfamiliar with. Some of us are familiar, but a lot of us are not familiar. I didn't have any emotions before I started practice. You know, I had one. I had one. I'd get moody. Everything was moody. I was either fine or moody. And that was it. That was a pretty limited range, but practice really opens up the whole can of mood, and there's a lot. There's a lot in there. And so we have to learn how to, you know, recognize, and kind of come into balance with this whole emotional terrain that we might not have been familiar with. This, for some of us, is a long process. A long process. You know, I think it took me 10 years to kind of do the repair work of my, you know, repressed, suppressed, you know, childhood. 10 years to kind of recover, you know, a little bit of my humanity that just got crushed from just the way I was brought up in the culture and the family, and just to kind of become human again, a little bit human, a little bit more human with a wider range of feelings and kind of sensitivity, a willingness to acknowledge and an ability to tolerate the intensity of what life offers. And to come out of denial about, you know, the way things were growing up. And all of us had, you know, dysfunctional families. And all of us had painful childhoods. It's just not possible to grow up without experiencing just a tremendous amount of pain. It's just not possible. And so we recover it, you know. In the process, we cognitively make a lot of adjustments to reframe our life then and our life now because of what we're learning about ourselves and what we're learning about the nature of the mind. In maybe psychological terms, it's like we recover the shadow side of our personality. We see our personality and we recover the shadow side of it. I don't know definitely or technically what that means, but you know, we see a lot of the painful, shameful, humiliating stuff that we would rather not acknowledge about ourselves. And in case you haven't seen any, well, keep looking. It will appear, believe me. And you can't deny it anymore. Can't deny it. You just got to deal with it. And you just got to open to it, and this is the way it is, and, you know, all of that all of the spin and all of the, you know, denial and all of the fear and all of the shame, you just have to open to. And you can. You know, of course, mostly it's in the privacy of your own mind, thank God. Because, I mean, if your thoughts and feelings were being displayed on a screen above your head, you'd be afraid to wake up, afraid to open your eyes and see who was watching. But we see it. We see it. And that's what's important, is that we see it. And we've seen it all. And it's just recovering the memory of it. Mindfulness is remembering. It's both remembering to be present now, but it's also the recovery of memory that has been buried or lost or hidden or covered up in delusion, and we uncover it. Well, this, you know, as I said, it can take some time. It can be painful. But depending on your, you know, determination and the love of the people around you and your self-acceptance and the skill of your teacher, you'll get through it. And in the process, maybe the first kind of knowledge that we gain, that this whole package of experience that we're paying attention to is really not so personal. It seems so personal. I mean, at that level of personal history recovery and personal history review, it seems so, it's all personal. But at some point we begin to see and really understand that in all of that process, it has always been and always will be just something being known. That's all that's happening. Something is being known. Something is being known. Something is being known. It can be physical, it can be mental, it can be pleasant, unpleasant, fearful, gross, subtle, novel, unique. It's just something being known. Something being known. Something being known. And while that sounds so generic and kind of, you know, insignificant and kind of like, yeah, so what? When you really get that, it just opens up the whole mind as just this impersonally functioning conditioned apparatus. And in a way, it's a huge relief. It's just like, wow, this isn't all about me. It's just stuff happening, and you can begin to watch it and observe it and really understand it. And occasionally we get, you know, we still get really entangled and really invested in, you know, I want this to be known and not that to be known, or I want it to be known clearer or better or not so clear. But nevertheless, once you start seeing it's just something being known, then it opens up. You can just, you want to know everything. It's just like there's no more hiding, there's no more personality sculpting, there's no more, you know, shame about anything. It's just like, I want to know everything. And awareness will do it for you. It'll show you everything. And when you get to that stage, it's very exciting, actually, in practice, because, you know, there's less fear. There's just a willingness to see anything. You know, it's just like, I dare you. Show me, you know, I can handle it. And that's the first layer of non-delusion, the first, where we really start peeling back the layer of, the layers of identification, being identified with the mind, and then peeling off that layer and just saying, you know, just seeing that the mind is not yours. It's not your mind. You know, stuff happens in the mind that's, well, it's got nothing to do with you. But you're responsible for it. You have to do something with it, because if you don't take care of what appears in the mind, it'll torment you. You'll really suffer. But you can't control, you know, directly and continuously what appears in the mind. Especially if you practice awareness, there's going to be all kinds of stuff appear there. So that's the first kind of knowledge, Dharma knowledge that arises in the mind. Even that level of knowledge, that just something being known, and really seeing your experience in that way is, I'd have to say, very difficult to achieve. very difficult. But, you know, if you keep practicing, as you practice, and many of you see it already, but it will come. You can't stop it from happening. You'll start to see just something being known, something being known, something being known. When that matures, or as you get more facility of that and seeing things at that level, the next layer of understanding that emerges is that you begin to see that what appears is not random. It's not random. It arises due to causes and conditions. And you begin to see the conditioning that gives rise to different states of mind, different states of being, different emotions, different thought patterns. And you begin to see it, not because you figure it out, but because you've seen it 100,000 times. 100,000 times you've seen the door open. Door open, door open, door open. Eventually you understand how the door opens. You know, in the mind. Certain things appear in the mind and you begin to see. You really begin to understand. Oh, things happen due to causes and condition. It's not random. It's not adventitious. It's not an accident. And this is kind of one of the understandings you get. What happens to you? It's not accidental. What you experience? It's not accidental. It's due to causes and conditions. Some of which you have a part in, a lot of which you do not. But nevertheless, it's not accidental. And so that means that there's an orderliness to the what appears in the mind. There's an orderliness to the unfolding of the mind. And that allows a certain level of trust, actually, that you can trust that, oh, there's an orderliness that unfolds the mind. There are patterns to be discerned in the unfolding of the mind. And very well documented. They're all laid out if you want to go look them up. But we begin to intuit that and understand it. This is the second kind of knowledge that we gain through insight practice. This kind of knowledge, those two kinds of knowledge, the something being known and the orderly or the conditionality of what appears, not available through tranquility practice. You don't gain this knowledge through any kind of samatha practice. You do not. You can do all the preliminary work, you know, loving kindness does a lot of self-repair work and compassion and reflection on the virtues of the Buddha and stuff like that. Can do a lot of prep work for handling the unfolding of the personal history, but it doesn't reveal these kind of knowledge. The third layer of unpeeling of the onion, really, if you will, in what you see in the impersonality of this process is that something being known, you begin to see the conditionality of what is being known, what appears, and you begin to see the conditionality of the knowing. The next thing that dawns on you as a wisdom or an understanding is that everything is changing. Now, do you know that things change? Of course, everybody knows that things change. We know it up here. We know it up here is a concept. You know, seasons change, people grow old, you know, the economy changes, you know, things change. We only know it up here. We don't live it down here. We're not living from the place of really accepting everything changes. We're still trying to solidify our sense of ourselves, we're solidifying our relationships, we're solidifying our finances, we're solidifying. We want things to be dependable, reliable, and predictable. No change. And you have to give that up. You know, if you don't give it up, well, you'll suffer. Because eventually you come to understand everything is changing. And it's changing very rapidly. Very rapidly. Well, when the truth of change in the heart, when the heart really understands that, it provokes a tremendous amount of fear. Just a tremendous amount of fear, because all that you've done in your life is tried to stabilize things and be sure and confident and stable and fixed and predictable, and now you're seeing that none of that is going to happen, ever. Never did and won't. And, oh my God, that can be pretty terrifying. And so a whole new level of fear has to, you have to learn how to deal with a whole new level of fear. And You will. You'll get it. But you'll get it by just being willing and able to be with the present moment again and again and again and again and again. And the present moment is always just something being known, something being known, something being known. And you can recognize the something, and you can recognize the knowing, and it's okay. But when you back off from the something being known into the macro picture of nothing is stable, everything's unstable, it's always in flux, and good luck, that can be terrifying. But just something being known, something being known. So you start moving between this kind of relative reality of our ordinary human relationships and what occurs there, which is always unstable, and the moment to moment, kind of the confidence that you have with seeing this is being known. This is being known. So there's kind of a little bifurcation in the mind there, where the mind is moving between what we call relative reality and experiential reality, what's going on there. A lot of confusion actually occurs in students when they confuse these two perspectives of reality, when they ask a question from relative reality point of view and get an absolute or experiential answer. It's just like, or they're looking for a relative answer to an absolute question. A skillful teacher will help you tease apart that this question is coming from this perspective. It needs to be answered in this perspective. This question is being asked from the experiential point of view. It has to be answered in the experiential point of view. If things are seen, felt, known to be constantly changing, incessantly changing and rapidly, everything is unstable. The second understanding is everything is really unstable. Nothing is going to... It's like the ground is shifting underneath you all the time. Well, this is also very unstabilizing. And it takes some considerable familiarity with instability to get comfortable with it, to be at ease with things are really unstable. Because when you see that things are impermanent, and when you see that things are unstable, it's not only this thing that arises and being known, it's your sense of yourself is also seen as being impermanent and unstable. And your practice is seen as impermanent and unstable. And so you don't feel good about yourself, you don't feel good about your practice, you don't feel good about the experience, and yet the teacher says you're doing great. So it's just a little bit of a train ahead. When things are incessantly changing, when things are seen to be unstable, you'll also realize that you cannot control it. You can't control people, you can't control events, you can't control the environment. The most you can do is hope to respond rather than react to the way things are. And that's where practice takes place. But this understanding that things are really out of your immediate control, they really are. This is kind of contrary to what we've been taught. We think we're in control. We think, you know, We're the ones who make the decisions that affect our life, right? Yes, wrong. I could lead you through an exercise to show you how flimsy our sense of I'm the one who makes the decisions in my life really is. We make them based on deeply conditioned habits and patterns of reactivity, often against our own best interest. Just think of just think of someone else's addictive or obsessive patterns of behavior. Acting in their own worst interest over and over again, consistently, religiously, fanatically, energetically. And we do the same thing at times. How does that happen? Well, we're not in control. We do the best we can. We bring as much reflection and wisdom and whatnot, and there's other conditions that play in the world. So this is kind of hard knowledge to to gain. And you need, most of us need a lot of encouragement and a lot of inspiration and a lot of repetition. You're just in there again and again and again and again and again. But when you can stabilize your attention with this understanding that things are impermanent, they're unstable, they're out of control, and it's okay. Wow. Now what's going to shake you up? What's going to shake you up? Things are changing, it's all unstable, and I'm not in control, but it's okay. Just things being known. You know, the mind takes a lot of delight in that. The mind just gets really radiantly happy, really, just knowing that. What is known is really, but knowing that you know that makes you very happy, makes the mind very happy. Because the mind is not entangled. The mind is seeing things as they truly are. That is where you begin vipassana. That's the beginning of vipassana insight knowledge. Okay, to get to that, to get all that up to that is not vipassana. That's just kind of like psychological repair work and kind of a little cognitive reframing. Then you start vipassana there. And due to time's limitation, I won't lead you through the rest of what happens in the progress of insight. But there is a whole progression of insight knowledge that emerges from this understanding that things change, they're unstable, and they're impersonal, meaning not yours. There's a whole train of knowledge, deepening layers of wisdom from the successive peeling away of layers of delusion that occurs by just continuing to pay attention to what is arising and the quality of the knowing. And you always come back to this. This is the vehicle of the whole unpeeling. Something being known. And the process and the progress of insight is also impersonal. It's not about whether you have the capacity to do it. You don't. But awareness does. Awareness will do the work. Your task is to cultivate awareness. Something being known. If you do that, this process happens automatically. It unfolds by itself. You don't have to make it happen. You don't have to know what's coming next. You don't have to plan for it. It will happen. The best we can get, the best it gets in relationship to all of this that's happening is that we arrive at a balanced mind. That the mind just comes to a place of understanding and acceptance and non-reactivity to this is the way it is. This is the way it is in the mind, within yourself, in others, in your relationship to others, in the environment. This is the way it is. And the mind is totally accepting of it and at ease with it. Not radiantly happy, but not depressed either. Just accepting. This is the way it is. And the mind really can arrive at this place of, I say non-reactivity. It's not non-reactivity because you're in denial and avoiding and fearful of something. It's because none of those are in the way. And there's just no expectation that it should be different, no demands that it be different. There's just an acceptance. This is the way it is. That level of non-reactivity, that level of awareness, that level of balanced mind is subtle and exquisite. And it is the place where the healthiest material elements are conditioned by the mind. That's where the mind produces just very healthy material elements in the body. This is where those who in the meditation center in Burma, those who experience spontaneous healing events, if you will, this is where their practice was hanging out, at this equanimity, at this level of equanimity, and for sustained periods of time, so that as the well, we'd say diseased material elements passed away in the body, the new element, material elements that were born out of the mind were very healthy, replacing those that were unhealthy. And in this is the way it's explained in the manual of the booklet that has all these healing stories in it. And that still is not enlightenment or anything like that, but it is the foundation from which the mind can let go of the known and access the unconditioned, where we really, where the mind goes beyond conditioning to the unconditioned. And that's enlightenment or nirvana or however you want to, or however you understand that, but that's the place where the unconditioned is realized. And it is possible. It's not only for people at the time of the Buddha. It's not only for monks or nuns living in caves for years upon years. It's available to each one of us if we invest the time and the skill and learn how to be mindful and allow ourselves to go through that process. It's not unavailable. It is definitely available to us, any of us that want to make that. They want to see that terrain of the mind. And of course that is the direction that the Buddha's teachings are pointing, and the direction that the Buddha's practice will take us, if you care to follow. This is wisdom. This is the development of, this is the track of wisdom that insight practice reveals. And with any accumulation or with any acquisition of any of these layers of knowledge through the peeling away of delusion, there's more faith. With that understanding, you just feel so, with any of those understandings, you feel so inspired and so committed and so trusting of the practice that you make more effort, you get more mindful, you get more collected, you see more of the way things are. With that, there's more. And this is the way that the five spiritual faculties gradually and cyclically grow in strength and are continually brought into balance, resulting in more stable equanimity as you move along in your practice. Until, poof, free, like that. Or momentarily, anyway. The five spiritual faculties is a good template for understanding a practice, for understanding, oh, this is what occurs in practice. Faith, energy, awareness, concentration, wisdom, gradually, cyclically growing to equanimity, etc. But someone asked me a question yesterday, not here in the hall, but outside of the hall, about, well, yeah, but what can I do with this knowledge? And in discussing with them, I realized that I've talked a lot about, you know, faith, energy, mindfulness, concentration, wisdom. And I don't mean for you to be continually monitoring your practice, faith, energy, concentration, wisdom, because, well, that's not awareness. That's thinking. Thinking and monitoring, evaluating, and this isn't all about acquiring a whole lot of new techniques, but it is important to hear, and you know, periodically you can understand, you can review your practice and understand it in terms of any of these five faculties or the development of them, and it's useful that way, and it can give you a lot of confidence in practicing. But please don't take everything I've said as something to do or some technique to apply in your practice. It's not. It's more an understanding that can be in the background of your practice, whether you're doing technique or not, as a way of supporting your faith, guiding your awareness, and helping you to understand, reveal the wisdom that your practice is showing you in that way. Yeah.